The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
And first pitch crushing! Deep left field!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Finally, we've made it back to a great position, shortstop. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Monday, November 21st, and welcome to Thanksgiving week. I am Frank Sample, joined by the one, the only, Scott White. How's it going, Scotty?
It's going great.
It's going great.
How about you,
Frankie?
I
can't complain. It's Thanksgiving week. I'm a big fan of Thanksgiving, as I assume many people are, coming up in a couple of days. Do you have any fun traditions or anything that you do in particular with your family?
Nothing that I think would impress anybody. Just the normal Thanksgiving stuff. What about you?
I do watch Just Friends every year. That is something that I don't know how it's become a tradition, but it's kind of the kickoff of the Christmas season. You know, we watch the parade in the morning, eat dinner, dessert, drink a little bit, watch some football. And then we always, it's going on for like 5 years now. We end the night with Just Friends. It's great. And a comedic masterpiece, I must add.
But I like it.
It's great.
I enjoy it. It's been a few years since I've seen it, but it's disarmingly good. I can endorse that one, Frank, for you. I'm not going to make fun of you for Just Friends.
Well, Scott, I am inviting you, once you put the kids to bed, turn on Just Friends late at night and join me in watching it on Thanksgiving. Anyway, today on the show, we are going to talk about shortstops. We've got a recap, take a look at the top 10 from this past season. And then, of course, we will get into Scott's early 2023 rankings. And Scott, obviously, I mentioned up top, shortstop, great position, much better than second and third base. I would say it rivals first base. I would probably even argue that shortstop is better than first base. Would you agree with those statements?
It's better for a while, and then it gets worse.
Yeah.
If we're talking a 15-team context, which usually I'm trying to downplay the 15-team angle, but if that's the format we're talking about, 15 teams, standard roto, so everybody has a middle infield spot to fill, it drops off a cliff before that draft is over. But I think if you're talking like a 12-team head-to-head league, then that's not anything you have to worry about. Because there's enough depth to get you that far and beyond in that format. First base, on the other hand, you know, it almost never runs out of players who are at least usable, you know?
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends on what format you're talking about, which is deeper.
No, I think that's a really good way to put it. And looking at early ADP, things are going to change. There's only been 18 NFBC drafts so far. You see these big teardrops so far where after the fifth shortstop, I'm not going to reveal who they are because, you know, save that for later on. But after the fifth shortstop, he's going at pick 32. There's a jump down to 73. So 40 spots in value. After the 12th shortstop, going at pick 84, we see the next one at 102, 20 spots, a 20 spot drop. After 16, pick 124, you see it drop down to 151. Things are going to change, but it's very clear to me that there are big drop-offs, big tier drop-offs at the shortstop position, and we'll get into that a little bit later on, but let's recap the position once again, and we'll start with the number one shortstop, no surprise here, Trey Turner, who finished sixth overall in Roto this past season, has not finished lower than sixth overall each of the past three seasons. 3.4 fantasy points per game, that led the position, and he was basically the top player drafted last year, so he paid off. 298 batting average, 21 homers, 101 runs, 100 RBI, 27 steals, 5 category contributor, as consistent as they come, Scott, has hit 298 or better 4 seasons in a row for Trey Turner. I guess the only thing you can knock on him is the power has taken a little bit of a step back each of the past 3 years. You see it in the slug. You see it in the home run to fly ball ratio. I would say he's probably more of a 20-ish home run hitter now in this environment. But it also comes with a great batting average and loads of steals. So no issues here.
Well, I don't know that that's the only thing I would say against Trey Turner. The stolen bases, I think, are even more notable the way they've declined since. Well, obviously, you have the 2020 season in there, which was very short. But we'll just skip over that. Beginning 2018 through 2022, skipping over 2020, he's gone from 43 steals to 35 to 32 to 27 this past year. And it wasn't an issue of him missing time with injury. He played 160 games in 2022 and stole just 27 bases. So he's not, like, look, he's a good source of stolen bases and better than a lot of what you'll find at any stage of the draft, but he's not as big of a standout as he once was. And that has been a continuing trend for Trey Turner. I feel like his category where he stands out the most is actually batting average. I mean, 298, what he hit in 2022 is on the lower end of what Trey Turner's normally been doing. Led the majors with a 328 batting average in 2021. So definitely going to help you there and will help you in steals, but just he isn't going to set you apart as much as maybe you associate him with. And then the other issue for Trey Turner is we don't know where he's going to be. We don't even know what team he's going to play for. And so a big part of his value was the 100 RBI, the 101 runs scored by playing in a ridiculous Dodgers lineup. Trey Turner reached base at only a 343 clip. So he hits well, but doesn't have like a lot of natural on-base skills. And if he's not in such a stud, as a star-studded lineup, his totals in those two categories are going to suffer too. So I think he is safe. He is certainly a first rounder, but you know, we were talking about third baseman last week. We're looking at third base, and I talked about how Jose Ramirez is in the discussion for number one. I'd have him number two behind just Aaron Judge. And the reason Trey Turner is behind both of those two for me is because I don't think the upside is quite the same, and he doesn't have position scarcity going for him. He's the one of those three who plays in a deep position. Now, he's probably going to be the only shortstop to go in round one, at least in a 12-team league, but there are enough in the rounds that follow, enough high-end types that I don't think you're coming out ahead by taking Trey Turner and filling that shortstop spot so soon.
It's a fair point that you bring up. The steals obviously have been declining each of the past 4 years, as you pointed out. But I do wonder if maybe going to another team could see his steals spike back up a little bit. He's still really fast, 99th percentile in sprint speed. Yeah, he was hitting second, third in the lineup for the Dodgers the past couple of years. So I wonder if that has maybe stifled his ability to steal bases the past couple of years. But that's just
It could. Yeah. You're right. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why certain players could see their steals totals improve next year. But imagine just because the Dodgers are so efficient at scoring runs, that lineup was just a run-generating machine. There wasn't much incentive to run, even for somebody as fast as Trey Turner. And I know Freddie Freeman set a career high in stolen bases with them, but that seemed kind of fluky. You look at the way Mookie Betts' steals have gone down since joining the Dodgers. It's just not a big part of the team strategy.
All right, let's move on to number two. Francisco Lindor, who finished 12th overall in Roto, 3.2 fantasy points per game. That was second at the position. His ADP was 54.4 before the season. So quite a bit of value. Nice profit here on Francisco Lindor. He hit 270 with 26 home runs, 98 runs, 107 RBI, 16 steals. Scott, you know I loved Lindor last season. Now the ADP is back up a little bit. I'm not so sure. And this is a funny game that we play because I like, you know, I'll buy the dip, but now everyone else is back in. Maybe not everybody. Yeah. But, you know, if he's a second or third round pick, I don't know that I saw enough this year in the underlying numbers that gives me confidence to use a second or third round pick on Francisco Lindor. So that's where I'm at.
Well, you're saying he finished second, right?
He did.
Nobody's going to draft him second at shortstop. For me, he's fifth. He's fifth for next year. And
he's fifth in ADP right now, too. So, yeah, I guess
you're right. Yeah. So, yes, because of the quality of the four players ahead of him, that probably means a third round pick for Lindor, maybe fourth round. But, you know, that's where he deserves to go at the position. Now, are there good enough options to follow that maybe you don't need to be drafting him there? I would say so. We're talking about how deep it is. How confident are we that Francisco Lindor is going to outproduce Dansby Swanson, for instance? They both have similar drawbacks in terms of batting average, probably looking at like a 260, 270 mark for each of them. Similar power projections, speed projections. Swanson maybe projects for a few more steals. So, yeah, I think in that round 3 to 4 range, I'm more looking to fill third base if I haven't already, with Arenado specifically. He's the one he'd be taking at that point. Or second base, Marcus Semien, Jose Altuve, Ozzie Albies even. It's just an unfortunate point in the draft. It's not because last year I was pretty down on Lindor. Coming into 2022, I was pretty down on him. I'm not there anymore, but he's going to go at a point in the draft where I just feel like there are more urgent needs.
All right, let's move on to a name that you mentioned already. Dansby Swanson finished just behind Francisco Lindor. 13th overall in Roto, 2.9 fantasy points per game. That was tied for 7th at the position, and he was one of the most valuable hitters in fantasy this past year in terms of the value he provided, where he was drafted. His ADP was 122.8. Again, he finished as a 13th overall player. 277 batting average, 25 homers, 99 runs, 96 RBI, 18 steals. Actually, oddly, really, really similar to Francisco Lindor, which you mentioned. The runs, the RBI, the steals, all career highs for Dansby Swanson in a contract year. He's now a free agent, so we'll have to see where he winds up. How did he do it? Career high average exit velocity, 90.2 miles per hour. Career high hard hit rate. The BABIP spiked up to 346, but we've actually seen that before. It happened in the short in 2020, so you don't want to put too much stock into it. I think we probably see a little bit of regression in the batting average department, Scott, but this is a really fun and valuable player. It'll be interesting to see where Dansby Swanson winds up.
Yeah, I said 260, 270 when I was talking about him and Lindor. Swanson actually hit 277, so it was closer to 280, but I agree that it's probably more like that initial range that I pointed out. Not a great strikeout rate, 26%. So that doesn't help. And, you know, the power production was pretty good. You mentioned highest average exit velocity of his career. It was 73rd percentile. But if there's any regression in that area too, like I wouldn't say Dansby Swanson is a lock for 20 homers. Of course, we'll see what ballpark he winds up in. That will play a role. But 25 is the second most he's ever hit in the season. He basically set career highs in all five rotisserie categories, except for home runs. And that, you know, I think he had a 27 homer season. So 25 is pretty close to that. So it'll be hard for Swanson to replicate this exact line, but he's in the prime of his career. He's 28 years old. And I do think he'll be, like I'd be totally happy with him as my starter at shortstop. I'd rather, like you say he finished what, just behind Lindor. So where does that put him? Third at shortstop?
Yeah, third.
In roto leagues?
Yep.
He's not being drafted third. So that regression is kind of factored in, and I'd be totally happy with him as my starter. I'd rather do that than, I'd rather invest in a weaker position early and settle for like a Dansby Swanson at shortstop, because I don't feel like it's settling that badly.
for what it's worth, he has been much better in Atlanta versus other ballparks in his career. 773 OPS at home, 704 OPS on the road. So we will see where he winds up, and hopefully it's a good ballpark. Bo Bichette used a late season charge to finish 23rd overall in Roto, 3 fantasy points per game. That was tied for 5th at the position. His ADP entering this year was 5 on the dot. He was a mid first round pick, so obviously did take a little bit of a step back. He hit 290, 24 homers, 91 runs, 93 RBI, 13 steals, 8 caught stealing. So kind of curious to see where Bichette goes next year in terms of running now. Does he have the green light, or do they maybe hold him up a little bit?
Everybody has the green light next year, Frank. Come on.
I hope so. I hope you're right. You know, looking into what changed this year, Scott, there wasn't really much that stood out for me. I mean, the strikeout rate jumped a little bit. The home run to fly ball rate dropped a little bit, but he still hit the ball extremely hard, especially for a shortstop. Maybe it's tied to the humidor in Toronto. I know you mentioned that last week on our third base recap. 755 OPS at home this past season for Bo Bichette, 844 on the road. Maybe that's it. I there's nothing else really in the numbers that really explain why Bo Bichette took this step back.
Well, the most curious part for me is, yeah, the final numbers ended up being pretty great still. 290 batting average, 24 homers, more than 90 runs in RBI, 13 steals. Not exactly what we were hoping for when we took him in round one, but elite production. But it took a ridiculous month of September for him to get to that. He entered September batting 260 with a 725 OPS. For that 1 month, Bo Bichette hit 406, 7 homers, 4 steals. And that really saved his season. So, you know, if your league has playoffs early, if you just tuned out because football was starting and you thought you were out of the race in your league or whatever, you tuned out in mid-August, you missed all of that. And there's a good chance you did if you drafted Bo Bichette in round one, right? Like, there's a good chance he more or less ruined your season, even if the final numbers ended up pretty good. So I don't know what kind of effect that's going to have on his draft stock. Based on the very early ADP results, not much. It's like people just look at the overall line. Oh, Bo Bichette's great. He's not a first rounder, at least not a consensus first rounder anymore, but he's not far off. Yeah. And was it just the fluky way things played out? Was it just the ebb and flow of the season happened to go that way where it was ridiculously backloaded and there's nothing more to look into there? Yeah, I mean, maybe, probably, because we were scratching our head about Bo Bichette's production all year until that September. But I'm going to be reluctant to make a big investment in him. And again, what I've already been saying about Francisco Lindor and others, like, this is probably not a position I'm going to fill this early anyway.
And I kind of wish he didn't have that monster September, Scott, because if he didn't, I think he would probably be going closer to where Lindor is going. Middle third round, something like that. But again, monster September gets Bo Bichette back in the second round as a draft pick this upcoming season. Next up, we have Bobby Witt Jr. and Tommy Edman, but we spoke about both of those on the third base and second base podcast, respectively. So you can listen back to those to find out more. Willie Adames is next up. He finished 48th overall in Roto, 3 fantasy points per game, tied for 5th at the position. And his ADP was 145.4, so jumps 100 spots in value. He was the 19th shortstop off the board, so a big payday if you drafted Willie Adames. Lower batting average, but he absolutely came through. 238 batting average, 31 homers, 83 runs, 98 RBI, 8 steals. Leaned a little bit more into the launch angle this past year, Scott, which I think contributed to the lower batting average, but hits the ball hard and hits it in the air. Career high 13% barrel rate. That was second best at the position. And, you know, as I mentioned on the third base podcast, only 23 batters with 30 plus homers last year. Only 2 came from shortstop, Willie Adames and Corey Seager. This is a valuable player.
Yeah. And I think that's something that won't immediately register with people. They'll see, oh, Willie Adames hit 238 with 31 homers. That's disappointing. I wanted more from him, you know. because you're just programmed to view that stat line that way during an era when home runs were so plentiful, but they're not anymore. That was the second most home runs of any shortstop last year. I myself, even knowing that, am surprised he finished as high as fifth at the position. I think some down years for other shortstops contributed to that, as well as, you know, some time lost to injury for them. Willy Adames played 139 games. He stayed mostly healthy, so that helped. He's my 14th ranked shortstop going into next year. And it's not because I think it's going to decline. It's just because there are 13 other shortstops I like more. So that goes to show the depth of the position. If the fifth best player at the position last year, Willy Adames, is only checking in 14th for me, and because I'm not basing that on any expectation of regression, well, I guess that means I'd be pretty happy to draft my 14th shortstop as my starter at the position. And I actually did exactly that in our first mock of the year a couple weeks ago.
And I'd be totally fine with this guy. I mean, Willy Adames, you know, he has to, I guess, fit a specific team from a categories league perspective. You know, you got to have some batting average built up there. But if you're lacking power, especially from the middle infield spot, yeah, sure. Let's go for Willy Adames. And speaking of power at shortstop, Corey Seager finished 59th overall in Roto, 3.1 fantasy points per game. That was tied for third at the position. His ADP last year, 64.2. I guess before the season. I shouldn't say last year. It's still the same year. But he basically paid off where you drafted him. Corey Seager did. His first season in Texas was a productive one. He hit 245, career high 33 homers, 91 runs, 83 RBI. And his season actually could have been much better, Scott. He hit 245. His expected batting average was 283. He slugged 455. His ex-slug was 510. I don't really do this for specific players, and I'm still kind of forming my general strategy for next season, but I think Corey Seager might be the main part of my draft strategy for next year, just kind of building it around getting Corey Seager in the fifth or sixth round, because he is a player that I think can provide first or second round value if he can hit those expected numbers.
Yeah, we've all been pretty bullish on Corey Seager over the years, and it sounds like I'm going to be making apologies for him again. But you note the 40-point difference between his batting average and expected batting average. And I talked about this especially when we reviewed first base, how I feel like kind of a shorthand way to figure out which left-handed hitters are going to benefit from the so-called shift ban that's taking effect in 2023 is to look at that difference between expected batting average and batting average. Well, there aren't many players in the whole entire league with a bigger difference than Corey Seager, who, yes, is a left-handed hitter. And when you look at his batting average against the shift last year, okay, I'm going to go back to his first full season, 2016, and read off the batting averages for Corey Seager against the shift. Okay, ready? 343, 361, 333, 305, 313, 344, 242. He was one of the players who suffered the most against the shift last year, and he doesn't have a history of doing that, clearly, but it did affect him. In 2022, it was weird to see him hit for such a low average. Like that was never lacking in Corey Seager's game. And then you see the difference in the XBA and the actual BA. You note that shift is going away, or at least won't be as extreme next year. And I could see him bouncing back in a big way in batting average. And meanwhile, we saw him put together the big power season with the 33 home runs. So like he did take that step, and there are other changes that are coming that are going to help him put it all together finally, where he gets the average and the power together, and hopefully the actual stats finally line up with the expected stats. And yeah, Corey Seager does give you a second round type production. So I'm not going that far to say I'm building my draft strategy around him, but it's another year where, particularly at his cost, I would be very happy to draft Corey Seager, and I actually have him as my number six shortstop for next year.
The vibes are strong, Scott, with Corey Seager. Last year it was Lindor. That was the guy. I'm feeling it with Corey Seager, but hopefully no one else is listening to this podcast and they wind up feeling the same way as me.
It's November.
Yeah.
They're making Thanksgiving dinner.
That's true.
Listen, they're watching Just Friends.
Yes. Yes. Which everyone should be doing. Xander Bogaerts is next up. He finished 64th overall in Roto, 2.9 fantasy points per game. His ADP last year was 39 and obviously took a little bit of a step back, specifically in the power department. Only 15 home runs. He still hit 307. The counting stats were lackluster because, frankly, the Red Sox were not a very good team in 2022. The slugging percentage and the ISO, both his lowest since 2017. And, Scott, I got to give you credit for this one because you looked at the players who had the middling exit velocities going into last year. And Bogaerts was one of them that you identified, and you were worried about the power taking a step back, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and here's where things get interesting at shortstop, because we're going on and on about how deep it is, certainly relative to second and third base it is. But there are cracks beginning to show. You know, we've talked about how with the juiced ball going away, the players who seem most impacted are middle infielders who historically don't have who don't hit the ball especially hard. They don't have a lot of natural power. They have enough power that with the juice ball, it was getting over the fence just as often as the big power guys, but it hasn't historically been a normal part of the skill set for a middle infielder. And you saw it a lot at second base, but you saw it some at shortstop too. Specifically with somebody like Xander Bogaerts, who was a 33 homer guy in 2019 when the juice ball was at its juiciest, and was a 15 homer guy last year. So that's a big drop off. Now, I did hit 23 homers in 2021, where we're starting to see the juice ball phased out. And maybe he could get back to that, but that feels like the upside now for Xander Bogaerts, 20, maybe 25 home runs. And if he's in the teens again, I don't think that would be a big surprise. I don't think we should consider that 15 homer season that he just had a fluke. Now, Bogaerts is still like a really good hitter.
Yeah.
Last year was the third time in 4 years he hit over 300. And the 1 year he didn't, he hit 295. He's a career 292 hitter. So we know he's going to stand out in batting average. And there's enough power there that he could, you know, he could put a pretty good dent in runs in RBI as well. Not so much last year. It was kind of a down year for the Red Sox lineup as a whole. Devers saw his runs in RBI suffer as well. But I would say that I'd still be pretty happy with Bogaerts as my starter, but you can't count on him to be a positive contributor in home runs. He's not going to kill you in home runs, but he's not going to help you that much in all likelihood either.
And he could very well be losing Fenway Park. And according to StatCast Park Factors, 3 year rolling average, Fenway Park is third in park factor for right-handed batters. So if Bogaerts loses that, maybe he loses some batting average. Maybe he loses a few home runs. Depends where he goes. I've seen him linked to like the Phillies, and I feel like the Dodgers are linked to every shortstop right now. So we'll see. But that obviously could affect Bogaerts' value as well. Number eight here is Amed Rosario. He finished 67th overall in Roto, 2.7 fantasy points per game. His ADP before the season was 234, so big value for Amed Rosario. He hit 283, 11 homers, 85 runs, 71 RBI and 18 steals. Did lower his strikeout rate about 3.5 percentage points down to 16.6%. Amed Rosario has always been fast, 96th percentile in sprint speed. I kind of wish that he would run even more than he does, Scott. He's not a standout, and I think this is also part of where you're starting to see some cracks in shortstop. I think he's just kind of settled in. 280 plus, 10 to 12 homers, 15 plus steals. He's a solid player, but he's not a standout player.
Yeah, and this is also clearly where, if not for injuries, certain players would certainly rank ahead of Ahmed Rosario. I struggle with him because I don't see, like, this is not a guy I would be excited to start at shortstop. I could see why he deserves to be in somebody's starting lineup, at least in a roto league where you have the middle infield spot to fill. Like, he's certainly a serviceable starter in fantasy, but he will hurt you in power. He'll be pretty good in batting average, but not as, like, you know, not Xander Bogaerts good. The RBIs are going to be low because, of course, the home runs are. What could change the game for Ahmed Rosario is if the rule changes to encourage more stolen bases, the limited pickoff throws, the increased base sizes, which did have a huge effect in the minors when those changes took effect. If Ahmed Rosario uses his speed to take advantage of that. And I could see that happening. I could see him doubling his steal total from last year. He goes from 18 to 36. His career high is only 24, so that would be unprecedented for him. But it's, if teams are as aggressive as I expect them to be with these rule changes, if that ends up coming to pass, then I could see Rosario being one of the big beneficiaries of that. And it would completely transform his fantasy value. It would make him something like a better Tommy Edman, Tommy Edman, but with a higher batting average. And obviously that'd be really valuable. So I have him ranked a lot lower than this because, again, I'm not excited about drafting him, but I may end up regretting it when all's said and done.
All right, let's finish out the top 10 from this past season. And that will include Jeremy Peña and the player whom he replaced in Houston last year, Carlos Correa. So Jeremy Peña finished 103rd overall in Roto. He was starting to pick up some steam towards the end of draft season. He might have been drafted in some deeper leagues very late. If not, he was likely picked up very early on in the season. But just a special rookie season. Gold Glove, ALCS MVP, World Series MVP, and of course, a World Series ring for Jeremy Peña. He hit 253 with 22 homers, 11 steals. Really aggressive hitter. He chases a lot. Swings and misses a lot, only a 4% walk rate, but the tools are there. Scott, 68th percentile max EV, 95th percentile in sprint speed. There are a lot of underlying numbers that say you should probably not draft Jeremy Peña as your starting shortstop, but I don't know, Scott, there's just something about him. I'm enamored with it. I think he's going to be a player and I'm in. I like Jeremy Peña.
Well, I mentioned I have Willy Adames 14th for next year, and I'd be happy with him as my starter still, even ranking him 14th. That's kind of the cutoff for shortstops. I would be happy as my starter, and then 15 and on, not so much. Jeremy Peña is 15th, so he's at the top of that group where, so much of his production came early on. And I was inclined to rank him even lower because of that. But then, of course, he had that ridiculous postseason where he was at both ALCS MVP and World Series MVP. And it's like, okay, well, I have to give this guy a little more credit, I think. There's going to be a lot more buzz about him going into next year. He is fast. And, so 11 bases as a rookie, very likely that doubles next year as fast as he is with those rule changes taking effect.
He could be a 2020 guy, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, if the steals double, he would, and the home runs hold, he would be. I really don't like guys with poor plate discipline. I think that gives them a much lower floor than players with good plate discipline. And Peña reached base at a 289 clip as a rookie. So that's really bad. The strikeout rate isn't so bad. It's better than Dansby Swanson's, for instance. But still, it gives me pause. XBA was only 248. XSlug was only 397. Could he take a step forward and these concerns end up, they prove to be moot? Yeah, it's possible. But I don't want to be in a position where I have to bet on that, you know, especially given how many quality options there are here.
I get it, man. It's just, there's something about him. And I look, I've done this before where when I see a player in person do something spectacular, I just kind of fall for that player. The last time this happened was Rafael Devers. I think 5 years ago, I went to Sunday Night Baseball and he hit a home run off of Aroldis Chapman. Now, this is before Devers was a household name. I think it was his first taste in the majors. It was September, late season call-up. Hit an opposite field home run off of Aroldis Chapman. I was at game four of the ALCS this year where Jeremy Pena destroyed a pitch off of Nestor Cortez, and I was just blown away. Like, in a huge spot, their Astros are down at the time, just completely poised. I'm about it. And he was batting second in the postseason. If he does that next year, it's just, man, there's just so much upside for Jeremy Pena. Last on this list, I mentioned Carlos Correa, Scott, who at this point, he's fine. I think he's another player where you just kind of settle for. Maybe we're spoiled because of that, but he hit 291, 22 homers. Counting stats weren't there, mostly due to the Minnesota Twins. They just were missing so many players this year. The barrel rate was good. He hit the ball extremely hard, and now he's a free agent. You know, he's been linked to the Dodgers. That would be great. He's also been linked to the Cubs. That would be not so great. What do you think about Correa?
Well, I can't, it's hard to imagine him, even if he goes to the Cubs, it's hard to imagine him having as many issues with run production as he did with the Twins. I was looking at his stat line after the season, obviously trying to formulate my rankings, and I was trying to figure out why he finished so low. I mean, he stayed relatively healthy, 136 games, hit for average, which he hasn't always done. The power was there like usual. But yeah, it's the fact he had 64 RBI and 70 runs in those 136 games. Like, that's hard to do when you're as productive as Correa does. And I don't remember the Twins lineup being that bad. I know they weren't as good as they've been in recent years, but it's strange to me that those numbers ended up so low for Correa, given the number of games that he played. And yeah, hopefully he won't. Well, I mean, first of all, that goes to show you why I'm stressing that on the other end for Trey Turner. Okay, so if going from the Astros to the Twins did that for Correa, could something similar happen to Trey Turner if he doesn't end up in the right spot? But conversely, I can only see Correa getting better. You know, I mean, even like this is like Brian Reynolds stuff, you know, like the way Brian Reynolds' RBI and runs suffered with the Pirates. So
this is even worse than Brian Reynolds, Scott.
Well, let's look at that, because Reynolds in 145 games, so it was nine more games, he had 62 RBI, 74 runs, very similar.
Yeah.
But even Brian Reynolds in 2021, I mean, the Pirates weren't great then, and he had 90 and 93 RBI and runs. So like even in a bad lineup, if you're a good hitter, you can do pretty well in those categories. So the fact that Correa didn't, I don't know. It's weird to me. I think he and Xander Bogaerts are comparable because they're not going to give you like monster power. They're not going to be 30 homer guys, but they'll give you some power, and then they're not going to give you much speed the way some shortstops will, but probably a good batting average, some power, not much speed. So I see those two as similar. Between the two, I think Correa has the more upside because I could see him getting to 25 homers easier than I could see Bogaerts doing that. He has more fluctuation with the batting average. He has more health issues than Bogaerts. So I do rank Bogaerts over Correa. But upside-wise, they're similar with maybe Correa being a little higher.
Correa is not going to run. I don't think he has a steal over the past three seasons. If maybe he has one, he just does not run anymore. So
none. He has one steal since 2018.
Yeah. So you need to ask yourself: is the 8 to 10 steals, maybe Bogaerts could give a little bit more in this new environment? Is that worth 40 spots of ADP? Because that's the difference right now. Bogaerts is going 40 spots ahead of Carlos Correa, and my early inclination is no, it's not worth it. So I'd rather just wait and take someone like Correa as a fallback option. Rather than Xander Bogaerts a little bit earlier. Before we hit the break, I want to remind everyone that if you want to support your favorite fantasy baseball podcast. You can do that on the CBS Sports Store. We have an FBT collection, which includes many different items, a pint glass, a mug, shirts, hats, sweatpants, hoodies, and more. You can join in on the fun. Just search Fantasy Baseball Today CBS Sports Store on Google, or pull out your phone right now and scan the QR code in the top right corner of this video, somewhere over there. If you're watching, it's right above Scott. So again, yeah, just pull out your phone, camera, take a picture of the QR code, and then that'll take you right to the website. And we do have a very special deal for you. Use the promo code Friday between this weekend, November 25th through November 27th, to receive 25% off your order. Again, the code is Friday, only this weekend, November 25th through November 27th, 25% off your order, whatever you want to get Fantasy Baseball Today related. Let's take a break, and we'll hit Scott's early rankings here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's jump back in, and we'll look at Scott's early 2023 shortstop rankings. Obviously, we will not focus on the players that we've already talked about, mainly on this podcast. Top five at the position includes Trey Turner, Fernando Tatis Jr., someone we have not mentioned yet, 40 minutes into the podcast.
I did play.
He did not play. You are correct.
Yeah.
Bo Bichette is third. Then we have Francisco Lindor and Bobby Witt Jr., who does have third base and shortstop eligibility. Again, top five, Turner, Tatis, Bichette, Lindor, Bobby Witt Jr. Let's focus on Fernando Tatis, Scott. It's been a wild ride. He finishes the fifth overall player in just 130 games back in 2021. He hit .282. 42 homers, 25 steals. Massive. Looked like the number one or number two player heading into 2022. Then what happens? He injured his wrist in a motorcycle accident last offseason. He had surgery to repair a fractured scaphoid bone. He was getting ready to return in August. What happened then? An 80-game PED suspension. So as a result, he's on the shelf. He agrees to get his partially torn labrum in his shoulder repaired surgically in September. Okay, that's fine. I think we should feel good about that. And then in early October, a second wrist operation so that the wrist can hold up long term. Like there was some concern that maybe his first surgery was not going to hold up long term, which is like baffling to me. Why didn't they do it better? Or like, I don't know. They should have just been more cautious with the situation. Anyway, there's a lot going on here, Scott. And the final tally is that Fernando Tatis will miss the first 20 games of next season due to suspension. Maybe more than that, trying to rehab from all these injuries. I think he is probably the biggest wild card in fantasy baseball next year. His early ADP, 26.7, early third round pick.
Yeah, and I predict that moves up. I am not one to take risks in round one the way in FBC players in general are. I'm not one to take risk in the early rounds, I should say, not just round one. But even I am ranking Fernando Tatis higher than 26th overall. I have him, I think, about 20th. So more like the middle of round two. You know, what we went through with Ronald Acuna last year, I think, is kind of a warm-up for Fernando Tatis this year. The difference is being, okay, it's not just one surgery on the knee in Acuna's case. A serious injury, torn ACL, but it, you know, that's all he was coming back from. Tatis has got the wrist and the shoulder, and for that matter, the PED suspension, which for a player this young with this kind of profile, this clearly so strong and athletic, I don't put much stock in the idea that PEDs made him what he was. Like, we don't know the whole history of how much he used and when. Obviously, we know he failed the test, and he has explanations for that that, you know, you could choose to believe or not. But I think there's probably going to be an idea among some of those drafting that, okay, well, he's not going to be the same. Forget the injuries. He's not going to be the same because now he's not on PEDs anymore. And I just think that's unlikely. I don't think the history of players coming back from PED suspension supports that idea. So I'm not worried about that. But because he is serving that PED suspension, you're going to have to stash him on your bench rather than an IL spot for those 20 games. And then is he going to be back right after 20 games, or is he still going to be rehabbing those injuries? I don't know. I think that's very much in question at this point. So it's a lot. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a guy who was on a 50 homer, 30 steal pace when we last saw him. I mean, just ridiculous numbers, numbers that would clearly make him far and away the best player in fantasy, even ahead of, you know, I've been a big proponent of Aaron Judge number one. If all this wasn't happening for Tatis, he would be the one guy that I would take over Judge. So to get that in round two, potentially in a best case scenario, you're getting that kind of production from late April on. That seems worth it to me. You know, he'll be picking up outfield eligibility probably at some point soon after returning. It sounds like he's going to split his time there between there and shortstop, maybe even some second base. So, yeah, I think Tatis is still an exciting pick despite all the concerns.
No bigger wild card again. I agree with you, Scott. When he returns, from that point forward, he can be the number one player in fantasy baseball. Or if he's not himself, or if these injuries start to linger, if the wrist, if the shoulder acts up, I mean, he could miss a bunch of time throughout the season. So we just don't really know. It's
well, I made the Acuna comparison. Acuna ended up returning about as early as anyone could have hoped for, but he just wasn't
himself.
Ronald Acuna. So I don't think anybody looking back is feeling great about. And in his case, he was going late in round one by the time the season started. And I don't think anybody who did that feels like it was worth it, you know?
All right, let's move on to the top 10 shortstops here. 6 through 10, we have Corey Seager, Dansby Swanson, Xander Bogaerts, Tim Anderson, Mr. Anderson, and Tommy Edman at number 10. Let's focus on Tim Anderson here, who we have not spoke about yet. He hit .301 with 6 homers, 50 runs scored, and 13 steals in 79 games. The issue here, Scott, is health. Tim Anderson has had a really tough time staying healthy. Since the start of 2019, he has missed 32% of his available games. Nearly one-third of the games that he is able to play, he's missed with injury. And I don't know if it's all just like one fluke thing after another. I mean, he's looking to come back from a tendon that he tore in his finger. He had surgery on it last August. You know, I think if the White Sox were actually in it late, he would have returned, but turned out they didn't need him because they were not competing anymore. You know, I think if he stays healthy, he's a 2020 candidate, but he has real issues staying healthy.
And I think there's a question whether he is really a 2020 candidate anymore. I've questioned his steals output in the past because, you know, technically he's still had just one 20 steal season, never had a 30 steal season, but a lot of it has to do with injuries. And if you pace the numbers out, you know, he would have done better in that. And with the changes happening across the league, I certainly think he's going to be a plus in steals next year, is Tim Anderson. But you know, I was, the same thing I was saying about Xander Bogaerts also applied to Tim Anderson, a guy with middling raw power. Now with the landscape changing, with the juice ball gone, you know, he played 79 games last year. That's almost exactly half a season. He hit 6 home runs, so that's pretty easy to pace out. It was a 12-homer pace for Tim Anderson. And I think, you know, looking at his history, average exit velocity, only once has he been 50th percentile in average exit velocity. Last year he was 37th percentile. That's much closer to normal for Tim Anderson. So batting average standout, steals standout. Probably not going to be so great in home runs. So he's kind of a supercharged Tommy Edman, who another guy we haven't talked about yet, but with all those health concerns. And I think that makes this ranking appropriate for him, 9th at the position. I know I've kind of historically been the downer on Tim Anderson, and you guys have given me grief for ranking him this low, but I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. I think I'm more with the consensus now with this 9th overall ranking at shortstop.
And he is going later than he normally is. So, I mean, I guess credit to the early drafters. They're really factoring in either A, the injuries, B, the lack of power, or C, both of those things at this point. So I agree with you, actually. Yeah, he's probably more of a 12 to 15 home run guy. And, you know, maybe he runs a little bit more, 25 steals, something like that. I think he's fast enough to do it, but, you know, we've only really seen it once back in 2018, 26 steals for Tim Anderson that season. 11 through 15 in the rankings, we have O'Neill Cruz, Carlos Correa, Wander Franco, Willy Adames, and Jeremy Pena. Let's start with O'Neill Cruz, a physical freak, Scott. I mean, 6'8", exit velocities everywhere, setting records. I mean, 122.4 max EV, the highest in the StatCast era, 98th percentile sprint speed. This combination of power and speed, you just don't really see it every day. The problem, he strikes out a lot. 35% strikeout rate, which caused him only to hit 233. He did improve that in September. He got it down below 30%. There's a lot of upside here, Scott, but there's also a lot of concern. The strikeouts, and specifically against lefties, he was been really, really bad so far. So kind of like Tatis, not to the same level, but O'Neill Cruz, I think, is one of the bigger wild cards in fantasy this year.
Yeah, I would agree, and I've struggled to rank him because the upside is so high, but because this position is so deep, how hard do you want to go after that upside? How much would you rather just, okay, I'm gonna get a good option here that I can trust? Like, is that the preferred way to go rather than selling out for the upside? And I think my ranking suggests I'm more in that camp, 11th at the position. But I do have him ahead of guys like Carlos Correa, Wander Franco, Willy Adames, who we said finished 5th, at least in 5x5 leagues last year. So I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of between the two extremes where I would, at a certain point of the draft, before even all the good starters are gone at shortstop, I would be comfortable taking O'Neill Cruz and just gambling on the upside. It helps that his very best came at the end of the season from September 1st on, hit 288, 6 home runs, 5 steals. That's 29 games. Struck out at the 30% rate during that stretch, still really bad, but that's compared to 35% overall. And I think if you're hitting the ball as hard as O'Neill Cruz does, which is harder than anybody, you can get away with a 30% strikeout rate. This is how Aaron Judge's career started. He was striking out at a 30% clip back in those days, but it didn't matter because his quality of contact was so good. I think Cruz could emulate that. And even if we take out, okay, September, you know, it was just 1 month. You can't just look at that best segment, the best small segment of a hitter's sample and decide that's who he's going to be going forward. Even if you'd want to just look at the whole just the totality of the production for O'Neill Cruz as a rookie. 87 games, roughly half a season. He had 233, 17 home runs, 10 steals. So just, you know, if 87 games, roughly half a season, you double that, 34 home runs, 20 steals. Like, it doesn't, you don't care if he's hitting 233, if he's doing that, right? Yeah. So like he did show us a lot as a rookie. And I think he showed us enough that we shouldn't be so scared of the downside. It's just, there are so many good players at this position.
Yep. As I mentioned again, just a wild card. The range of outcomes for O'Neal Cruz is he can be a 40-30 guy. I don't think that would really surprise anyone. I think, again, based on his physical traits, he can pull that off. I also think there's a scenario where he's actively hurting your fantasy team. And, you know, he's just completely killing your batting average, and maybe he's in and out of the lineup. I think that's within the range of outcomes. Wander Franco, another name we haven't mentioned yet, Scott, and he was derailed by injuries this past season. He was dealing with a hamstring early on, and then he had a broken hamate bone, which forced him to miss about 5-6 weeks in the middle of the season. He wound up hitting .277, 6 homers, 8 steals in 83 games. Does not strike out. A sub 10% strikeout rate for a 21-year-old is just bonkers. It's so rare in the game today. 9.6% strikeout rate for Wander Franco. He hits a lot of line drives, but the exit velocity, the hard hit rate, very underwhelming, Scott. Maybe playing through injury affected the numbers overall here. I think Wander Franco is kind of a tough player to rank as well. Did you feel that when you were ranking shortstop?
Yeah, because I don't want to sell the upside short. He's still only 21. He was the consensus top prospect in baseball for a couple years, right?
Yeah.
Entering last year being the latest. And having that kind of plate discipline at such a young age against major league pitchers, I mean, Juan Soto is the only other player I can think of like that, at least in recent history. And so that's very impressive. But the exit velocities were uninspiring during that 2021 season, and they only got worse last season at a time when we're realizing exit velocity matters more than ever because of the way the ball's playing now. And so, you know, 6 home runs and 314 at bats, that's really nothing special from Wander Franco. He was 96th percentile for average, or for expected batting average. Actually underperformed that mark when he hit only .277. But is he in the long run just an Ahmed Rosario? I don't think so. But like, that's what the profile looks like right now. Yep. You know?
Yeah. Right now it looks, you know, if I was projecting him for next year, I think he could hit .300. I think that's the skill set, lots of line drives, and he makes as much contact as he does. But where's the power and where's the speed? He actually stole a little bit more than I thought he was last year. Is he 15-15? That's a good player with a really good batting average. That's a productive fantasy player. But that's not his upside. That's not a first or second round player where, you know, some people thought he could get to. He still could get there. I don't know that it's going to happen yet. I think we still need to see a little bit more from Wander Franco. But I agree. I don't want to sell him short because I still think, you know, he could get there one day.
And because the strikeout rate is so low, it's worth pointing out, I have him 4 spots higher in points leagues. Like, there's much less concern about him living up to his potential in that format. He was basically right in between Xander Bogaerts and Carlos Correa in terms of head-to-head points per game last year. He was ahead of Tim Anderson, for instance. So he was very much a part of that second tier at the position in points leagues. But yeah, it was pretty disappointing in 5x5.
All right, 16 through 20 in the early shortstop rankings. We have Javier Baez, Ezequiel Tovar, Ahmed Rosario, Jorge Mateo, and Nico Hoerner. Scott, let's start with the top two here. Javier Baez's first season in Detroit was a disaster. And I think the fact that he played his home games in Detroit, we've seen this with many players before. I mean, most notably, Nick Castellanos wasn't able to hit for power in Comerica Park. Javier Baez hit .220 with a .607 OPS at home. I think he can get better. I typically don't like to draft players their first year in a new environment. So maybe you buy a little bit of a dip on Javier Baez. But the other name here is Ezequiel Tovar, a big prospect with the Rockies. Early projections, Scott, Steamer projections are out. They're pretty favorable. .280, 16 homers, 9 steals, and only 113 games for Tovar. You know, if he plays 130, 140, That means they think he can be a, you know, 20 homer, 12, 13 steal guy. That's a good player. What do you think about these two, Baez and Tovar?
Well, and obviously he has Coors Field working for him, so he's going to have a huge BABIP in all likelihood.
Yep.
They may actually be underestimating the batting average. They may be underestimating all of the stats there. Like he was the big breakout shortstop prospect of this year, Ezekiel Tovar. And, you know, my initial inclination was to rank him ahead of Jeremy Peña even. I kind of moderated when I saw that Tovar wasn't getting much traction in those early NFBC drafts. And maybe it's just uncertainty about, you know, whether he's going to make the opening day roster for the Rockies. I don't see why he wouldn't at this point if they were willing to call him up late. It's not like they have great they don't have an alternative at shortstop, really.
And if there's a team, Scott, that wants to put themselves in position to earn another compensatory draft pick, it should be the Rockies. So
it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I guess what I'm saying is if you're drafting really early, take advantage of that.
I already did, Scott.
The fact that everybody's overlooking Tovar because he could be a huge riser in spring training if it looks like he's going to snag that job for the Rockies. Let's see. Who else are we talking about here? Baez. Yeah. So Baez, I've been calling him a bust candidate for like 5 years and it finally happened. But now, yeah, everybody's so moved on from him that, yeah, he's still only 29. He does have this his profile relies on outlier production, both with BABIP and home run to fly ball ratio. It's just the way he's composed, and like he needs those two to succeed, and that's hard to repeat year after year. But he's young enough that I don't think he can't get back to it. You know, and he actually did improve his strikeout rate quite a bit in his first year in Detroit. So that was interesting. But the most encouraging thing for Javier Baez is that he saved the best for last. In September, he hit .293 with 6 home runs and .831 OPS. Obviously, if he was doing that all year, we wouldn't be talking about him in this light. And he said he felt pressure to perform after signing that big contract and was pressing most of the year, which is possible. I mean, there's no way to prove that that's what happened. I don't want to just completely take his word for it, but like that's, if you're looking for a positive case for Baez, the fact that he's offering that explanation and that he did turn things around finally in September, I think he could be a bounce back candidate, somebody who still has 25-15 potential at least.
I think
he's not a bad pick here.
I think you could say the same thing about Francisco Lindor, right? His first season with the Mets, he said something similar, right? A lot of pressure, new team, obviously big market with the Mets, not same situation with the Tigers, but in general, when you join a team like that, you do feel pressure and you do want to take on a lot of responsibility. I think we saw that with Lindor. I think we saw it last year with Javier Baez as well. The last two names here we haven't mentioned yet, Jorge Mateo. He was very useful this year, specifically with the steals. 35 steals, second most in baseball behind John Birdie. Did come with a .221 batting average. Doesn't completely sink you in power, has had 13 home runs. And Nico Horner, who basically did his best Gene Segura impersonation. I made that comp throughout the season. Kind of seems like a similar player, a player that is getting better over the past couple of seasons. He hit .281, 10 homers, 20 steals. Really does not hit the ball hard at all. Like maybe he was lucky to get to 10 homers, but he's fast. He makes a lot of contact. I think these guys are fine, Scott. They're more so, you know, middle infielders at this point in the draft.
Yeah, Horner was pretty good at yanking the ball in the air last year, which is how you can deliver a respectable home run total despite not hitting it very hard. He at least did pretty well at that last year, which is how he got to 10 home runs. And I know we've made the Gene Segura comparison to him in the past. I think that still seems fitting. At this stage of their careers, Horner's probably a better bet for stolen bases, but he's going to be helpful in batting average and may deliver a useful number of home runs. Won't deliver a lot. I think him and Ahmed Rosario are really comparable too, especially if you're looking at Rosario taking a step forward in stolen bases as I am. Jorge Mateo is a tough one because the 35 steals obviously in this format are very valuable. Like there's no reason to invest in Mateo in a points league. He just doesn't do enough apart from those steals, and they're not they're not as in demand in a points league. I don't know. Looking at it now, I'm kind of thinking I should flip the two. I should go Ahmed Rosario 18th, Nico Horner 19th, Mateo 20th, and then I would have Adalberto Mondesi 21st, who I think is in a similar situation to Mateo, profiling for similar numbers, but of course with a lot more injury risk. There's also, I think, playing time risk for Mateo with Gunnar Henderson presumably in the majors from start to finish. He's going to see some time at shortstop. Mateo has some experience in the outfield, but the Orioles, I don't think they ever played him there last year. Just they have good enough outfielders that they don't need to do that with Jorge Mateo. So could he be phased out? I think that's possible. So yeah, hard to know where to rank him in those 35 steals.
Well, Scott, if you needed that last nudge, last push, Nico Horner is going 20 spots ahead of Jorge Mateo in ADP right now. So if you want to make that swap, you are justified, sir.
Well, thank you, Frank.
All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Wednesday. Bye-bye.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.